So I suppose one upshot of the current situation, and we're not meant to mix households, so some of us have had to change our plans. I've had to change mine. And trying to look for a silver lining, fewer fights over the remote control. So the Christmas-themed films run into roughly three categories. I'll give you an example from each. Die Hard, Love Actually, and White Christmas. That sort of sums up what's available. Actually, that might be all that is available. The action, romance, and musical. And if you like one, the others are fairly detestable. The Christmas story, the Bible story as a whole, is a true story spanning thousands of years, and it's actually all of those. In fact, I know someone who'd add comedy to that as well. The rest, all other stories, as good as they may be in films or operas or books, as good as they may be, they are rooted in the story. And that is seen in the last reading. And the issue I just want to address briefly is why Christmas? We heard the Christmas story and then this odd reading at the end, why Christmas? And that video with the poem we saw, then the reading that Fran read, you may think is a bit odd and not very Christmassy, a bit left field. The video is a kid's poem, a Christmas version of something like The Tiger Who Came for Tea or something like that. It's one of the, as is vogue at the moment, where you have school nativities with an octopus. It's that kind of adding something in to spice it up as if it needed it. Rather, what that poem did and what the reading did from the Bible is the poem is meant to link to Revelation 12, and that the reading is actually about Christmas. You might not think of it as a Christmas reading, but it is. It's a mini Bible overview with the focus on the Christmas account, on those other readings that we heard. Not the events, but the why, or rather it's another way of looking at the events. And also how it links to you. Why Christmas? So we've heard of the virgin birth and the shepherds and the angels and the manger, but what does that have to do with me or you? It's nice, it's in the past, but what significance does it have? Well, Revelation 12 with the dragon and these fighting angels, you might think, well, that's even more obscure. But it actually connects the manger to you. Now, Revelation as a book, that's just a little section from it, is like abstract art or something like that. So it's a cross between Picasso, Banksy and The Matrix. So Banksy, his drawings, these are the ones I've seen, they're very clear. But they have a meaning that points way beyond themselves, I suppose, like most art does, I'm told. I don't understand it. Picasso, is his style of cubism, is about something that's real, but it looks a bit weird. And for anyone who's seen The Matrix, spoiler alert, but it's been around for a long time, is the whole idea is it peels back. You think you're living in reality, you're not. You're in The Matrix, and you have to peel back what you appears to be the case to see what really is the case. And so the word revelation, actually, that's what it means, is a looking backstage, looking behind the scenes. You've got the actors, that's us and what's happening in the news, but there's something happening backstage. And he uses picture language that he borrows from other bits of the Bible from. We just had the Rolling Stones bursting out. Funny enough, I think that was Sympathy for the Devil as well, which ties in really well with a bit we've mentioned later. So Revelation 12 is a summary of the Bible focusing on Christmas. I don't know if you saw this on the news the other day, but they had celebrities mostly and a few people in the street that did that six-word story thing. It's Ernest Hemingway made it famous. Ernest Hemingway had these six-word stories. And I can summarize the whole Bible for you in a sort of Hemingway-style six-word story. So here it is. Kill the girl, Kill the dragon, save the girl. And I repeat it because I got it wrong once, and it's only six words. Kill the dragon, save the girl. That is the whole Bible in six words. All fiction with their heroes, all romances are imitations of that. Kill the dragon, the source of all our suffering and sin and death. perhaps more aware of it now than normal, and save and protect the one that he loves. So the Bible is an action story and a romance and a musical. The hero who saves against all odds, or the perfect man that you need. I guess most of us in the room and watching, you may have a favourite, which of those kind of films you go for. And actually we find here both. And it's a song. So who's the dragon slayer? Well, we found out it's Jesus. Who am I in the story? Who are you? Are you the girl or are you the dragon? And the answer is, actually, it's up to you. And Christmas presents us with a choice. As we often have a gift, is to open and take that gift. And so the reading has in it two signs and a war. So sign one is a woman. And the natural question is, who is she? She's very special. She's clothed in the sun. She stands on the moon and she has a crown of 12 stars. Now, in the Old Testament, often that's an image, and the number 12 is an image for Israel, the people of God. And in Revelation, the writer John often uses that to show, to represent the people of God. And she's dressed in a very elaborate way, the sun and the moon, another way of talking about God's people in the Old Testament. And so this woman is God's bride. So just as we had a wedding here a while ago, and the bride dressed differently to how she normally would. She was just a special occasion. And so this bride is dressed in the sun and the moon with a crown of stars. And she's pregnant with a special child. And often in our carols and in the Old Testament readings that we have, there are these predictions of this special child's birth, Jesus, that long awaited and predicted. And the first reading that we had this evening is one of those. And it promises to the first woman that she will have, or one of her descendants will have, a very special child that will crush the devil's head. And through the Bible, there's various mini versions of this. Old Testament stories about a woman, often an unlikely mum, perhaps an elderly woman, perhaps someone who's can't have babies. And she gives birth to a hero. And of course, at Christmas, we have one faith-filled virgin who gives birth to a son, as Mary gives birth to Jesus. And that links to the second sign, a red dragon. And it uses frightening imagery on a cosmic scale. The stars fall, has 10 heads and horns and crowns, and he's red, which in Revelation is always the colour of violence. Who is he? Well, we're told later on in the reading that he is the serpent from the start of the Bible, the devil or Satan. He is standing ready to devour the woman's child. And as we heard in the reading Jeremy read, is at the time Jesus was born, Herod didn't want a competing king. He wanted to find out where the king would be born and have him killed while he was still very young. Something happened similar in the Exodus with Moses, and Pharaoh wants him killed. All the boys killed when they're young. So the promise to the first woman is that there's going to be this special child who will crush the devil's head, but also that the devil would strike at him. It will be costly for him. But what happens next? It says the child is caught up to God, and the woman flees to the desert and protected by God. That's very shorthand for the next bit. So what happens in the next bit is there's a war. And you think, why does this dragon want to kill the baby? Well, because the baby means war. The birth of the baby is the end of the dragon. And this is where it links with the normal Christmas story, and also with you and me. The war is actually happening all around us all the time. Often we hear, we had one of the readings about this actually, didn't we, and some of our carols, angels proclaiming good news and peace on earth. Yes, but it's the host of angels, and that word host means armies. It's an army of angels. And we've all been to lots of nativities with normally the blondest girls wearing the whitest tights and little cardboard wings. In the Old Testament, whenever we come across angels, they are frightening. They're large men with drawn swords. And that's why the shepherds are terrified. I'm not terrified when I meet six-year-old girls with blonde hair and tinsel halos and things, I would be terrified to read these guys from the Old Testament. They're frightening. And they say peace on earth. But they say peace on earth because the war's been won. And then he goes on to this war, this cosmic battle. And some of the films we see this time of year are like this, aren't they? Narnia, Tales, The Lord of the Rings, Star Wars. Is a clear good versus evil. And it's obvious who is who. Who are the goodies and who are the baddies? They look like a baddie. They look like a goodie. And they're definitely on one side or the other. Sometimes they change sides. Baddies started as goodies. Baddies redeem themselves and become goodies and so on. But my life isn't like that. I doubt yours is. It doesn't look like that on earth, does it? The lines aren't drawn tidily. Rather, the lines run through the sides and through people. Not goodies versus baddies. Rather, we're all baddies. And that's the problem with many divisions. And there's lots of divisions in the news for the last couple of years, hasn't there? I mean Brexit would be like the most tame one. And the problem is that we all know, I know I'm the goodie, obviously. So if you disagree with me, that would make you what? That would make you the baddie, wouldn't it? Because you're not the same as me. No, we're all baddies. If you explore your thoughts, if you just go back over what you have thought over the last week, perhaps over the last day, if you're honest, would you be comfortable to share that with somebody afterwards? Would you be comfortable to share, think of some of your friends, perhaps someone you're sitting with now, would you be comfortable to tell them what you've thought today, this week, even about them? There's something deeply wrong inside of us, if we're honest. When we pause, we know it. We don't often pause and think about it that way, but we know that that is true. There's something wrong with us. Really, as the poem said, there's a dragon in us all. All of us have been in opposition against God and his Christ. And that works. The way that works out is my independence from God. I don't get a sword and run into the street with the dragon, but I exercise independence from God. I don't really want to know him. That's the way it works. So we may not feel we're in the dragon's army, but that's okay. He doesn't want your friendship. He doesn't want you to be his fan. If you act independently of God, that's what he wanted. But of course, the dragon loses. How? Well, how's the war won and the dragon defeated? Well, it says, I'll read you from verse 11. They conquered him by the blood of the Lamb and by the words of their testimony, for they loved not their lives even unto death. It says by the blood of the Lamb and then by the word, by speaking of it. And where does the Lamb come into it? What have they done wrong? John in Revelation uses these picture words I mentioned, and in the Old Testament explains all this. Old Testament tells us what I've just said, that there's something wrong deep down in us and that we know it. And that separates us from God. The first people declared independence from God, and we all have done ever since. And the consequence is that we're separated from God and heading towards death. And we get what we ask for. We get an ongoing conscious awareness of that separation and that darkness and death. But in the Old Testament, there was a ritual where they took a lamb and they would put their hands on the head of the lamb and push it down hard. And they would then take the lamb to an altar where it would be killed. The lamb, and the symbolism is clear, that the lamb gets what I deserve, or what you deserve. But actually that points to Jesus Christ, who's often called the Lamb of God. The Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. That deep down wrongness that we have. And these lambs pointed, and think over the years, there must have been so many of them. And you read bits of the Old Testament, you think, what a bloody mess, quite literally. And so they point to that forgiveness with God is costly. It comes with the shedding of blood. It comes with a death. But also makes clear that they weren't the final answer. They point to the answer, which is Jesus. Jesus willingly takes our sin as his own. He takes that separation from God the Father. He takes that darkness and separation as his own. He endures great suffering and death. But that's not the end, as you know. He's raised, defeating death, and ascends and reigns. Revelation has covered that already in the book, and that's what I meant by the shorthand bit, where he repeats himself a bit. So the bit where he says, caught up with God to his throne, that's what he's talking about. So where Revelation 12, the thing that Fran read, links to the historic Christmas and us, and tells us the why. Christmas is about eternal, immortal God becoming a mortal baby. And like any baby, he was vulnerable. And Herod was there. He didn't probably know he was doing what the dragon wanted, but he was there to stop him at birth. And the purpose of that is that God comes to man and to women, that he would become a human like us, that he would grow up to be an ordinary man, but one who would reveal God to us in his actions and his words, and that he would go to the cross as the Lamb, and that he would rise again, beating death, and continue and ascend to the throne as ruler of everything. And so in those closing verses that Fran read, we see the devil has no power, because his one job was to keep you from God, to keep you in sin and heading to death, away from thinking about Jesus and God and all these things. It doesn't matter that you're not doing the worst things possible. It doesn't matter how bad you are, as long as you're living away from God and opposed to him. But now the devil has no power, because his tools and his end game is disarmed. Sin can be forgiven and death has been defeated. And there's a promise that in the new creation, the very end of this book, Revelation, the very end of the Bible, is there's a new creation where there is no suffering. There is no viruses or death or tears. And the rest of the chapter, if you carried on from where Fran ended, is the devil lashes out at God and the woman, in inverted commas, the people. She's an image of us, the church. So she's protected in the desert. God protects the church, but, you know, that's not really home, is it, a desert? They're protected, but they're not home. She's not home and at rest yet. That's to come. And that's why the world is the way it is. Satan is still thrashing. Sorry, a slightly grim illustration, but the first night, I think it was, or one of the early nights when we moved to Chelmsford, and some of you have been to our house, we've got a little garden that backs onto a big field, and it's sort of a bit, it's all been built on now, but there's some wildlife there. And one of the first nights, we endured some creature being killed in the field, and it's a bit grim, because creatures don't go to the fox or whatever, fair cop, you've got me. Enjoy your meal, bon appetit. They put up a fight, and it's even though they're going to lose, and it's horrible to hear. And this is what happens with the devil. He takes down, he's finished, but he takes down who he can as he goes. He's ended. There's only one outcome. Now I said, good and evil stories isn't quite how it is, but here's another difference. In them, although we suspect there's a happy ending, there's no certainty of a happy ending. I suppose that's the difference with the higher age rating films, is they often don't have happy endings. But this is a true story, and we've not arrived at the end yet, but we do know what that end will be. So do you see the connections? The baby born at Christmas crushes the dragon. He slays the dragon by doing away with sin and death itself at the cross. Kill the dragon, save the girl. Nothing can harm his bride, the church, the people. No one can. He saved the girl and no one can harm her. I said at the start, it's also a musical. So if you notice, it says, therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Revelation, like the rest of the Bible, is full of music. The central book of the Bible, the Psalms, is a music book that you sing and you rejoice. Hence why we as Christians like to sing. We have a whole range of hymns and old and new and psalms, and they cover the whole range of emotions, but they all have this note of victory and joy. And that's why it's all a bit weird at the moment. It's okay, you're at home, you can sing if you want. But we just listen to things. It's why it's unnatural to us, because we want to sing. It's a musical. And so we have a choice. Christmas is a war, but a war that's been won. And the lines run through each of us. We're all a mixed bag. We're capable of good, but we do, and we think, terrible things. You might think, well, why is that so bad if I only think them, I don't do them? It shows that the seed of them is in us. A symptom. These are all just a symptom of our state with God. So the last book of the Bible shows us how it works. It takes a little glimpse behind the scenes of what was happening at Christmas. And you choose your own ending to this story. There's a binary choice. The battle lines are drawn through you at the moment. But which side will you end on? One or the other? And that choice will go through eternity. And to make no choice is, in fact, a choice to go with the dragon. Now, effectively, the war ended at the first Christmas. And so, huge spoiler alert, we're just in those final throes now. And so there's a choice. Side with the one born at Christmas who took your sin, or declare independence and side with the dragon. Either be the one slain or the one saved. You choose life or death. As we saw in the first video, Christmas is a gift, God's gift to humanity. It's not automatic. People often think that, don't they, that somehow God just bestows this on you regardless. It's not earned. It's a gift. A gift that you need to receive. It's held before you, and it is your choice. Now, you might want to find out a bit more about this if it's a slightly different angle to look at it from. And of course, our services are always, we might be looking, don't look at Revelation every week by any means, but we're looking at this, these big themes, and details are on the links. And we have the online event. We saw the advert for earlier on the 21st about dealing with cancer and hope in the face of death. And the Christianity Explored course we do online. So wherever you are in the world, we meet in an evening on Zoom and have a short 7-week course where we have a 12-minute video and then a discussion with any questions are up for grabs. What we've seen this evening is a true story, but a true story that goes into eternity. But how will your story end? Even tonight, you can come to God through Jesus Christ. All you need to do is pray. That's just, pray just means speaking to God. And all you have to do is say to God, I accept your gift. Forgive my sins for Jesus' sake. Give me your Holy Spirit to help me live for you. That's all a prayer is. That's all you need to do.